This is Jay Sekulo. We discuss the leading candidates for the Supreme Court.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulo Live.
Yesterday, the president met with four potential nominees here at the White House. Those four potentials are Amy Coney Barrett of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, Judge Brett Kavanaugh of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, Judge Raymond Kethledge of the Sixth Circuit, and Amol Thapar, also of the Sixth Circuit, were all here yesterday.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
Really incredible people in so many different ways, academically and every other way. And I had a very, very interesting morning.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulo.
Hey everybody, welcome to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. I thought today we'd get into a couple of the leading candidates for the Supreme Court vacancy. There's Brett Kavanaugh of the D.C. Circuit and Amy Coney Barrett of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, because obviously there's a lot of press attention about those two. But look, I mean, the president's got a looks like somewhere between 4 to 7 that he's giving serious consideration to. The announcement's going to be made next Monday. But I'll tell you who's focusing on Amy Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh, and that is Chuck Schumer, the minority leader of the United States Senate. As to Amy Barrett, in a, I guess you'd call it a Twitter storm, he said, Amy Barrett is a judge on the Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit on at real Donald Trump's pre-approved list for SCOTUS. She passed his litmus test on overturning Roe versus Wade and striking down the ACA. Here's where she stands on America's big issues. Now, before we even get into what he then said, where is there an opinion about Judge Barrett on overturning Roe versus Wade, you might ask? And the answer is there isn't one. She's only served on the Court of Appeals for 7 months. Now, by the way, that's not a prerequisite to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States. Elena Kagan was the dean of Harvard Law School and no judicial experience, but was confirmed to the United States Senate. So, again, the focus becomes politically Roe versus Wade here before we even start the day.
Yeah, unless Chuck Schumer's got a listening device into the Oval Office or has tapped into the president's phone calls, how would he know that when she was up for the Seventh Circuit that President Trump asked her, or someone with the White House counsel's office asked her, one, will you overturn Roe versus Wade, and will you strike down the Affordable Care Act? I mean, this is just, again, Chuck Schumer making things up. This is, and by the way, the next nominee he attacks, which we'll go through next, he starts off with the exact same tweet. So he's putting this assumption in everyone's mind that Donald Trump and his team must ask everyone two questions, both abortion-related, really, because the ACA is two. One, will you strike down Roe versus Wade? Two, will you strike down Obamacare? And he's going to, I think, you know, the question is, he may not do it tomorrow because July 4th, but who's next on his hit parade?
Well, I'm sure he'll go after Kethledge and Hardiman and Joan Larson and who else knows. You've read through this, you know, CeCe. So Amy Barrett is someone that was a confirmed 55 to 45. They gave her a lot of pushback because of her Catholic faith in the last go-round. They probably wouldn't do that mistake again if she's the nominee, or maybe not. But what's your sense after looking at it?
Well, you know, she even at her confirmation hearing said it's never appropriate for a judge to impose that judge's personal convictions, whether they derive from faith or anywhere else, on the law. So she is strictly adhering to the law. So I think Schumer's attacks are just wholly without any kind of merit whatsoever. Whether she's, you know, going to make a good justice or not doesn't lay or rely on her position on Roe v. Wade.
So here's the interesting dynamic in all of this. Does anybody think for a moment that when Elena Kagan or Sotomayor or Ginsburg or Breyer, when they were nominated to the Supreme Court, does anybody think that the nominating president did not think that they were pro-choice, pro-abortion, in favor of a woman's right to choose, however you want to say it? But if you're pro-life, it's like an automatic disqualifier now, or at least to the minority in the United States Senate, from serving at the Supreme Court of the United States. Personally, I think that's ridiculous. Now, having said that, to draw a conclusion how a judge is going to rule on a case that has not come before them makes absolutely no sense. So we'll go through the particulars on this, but we want your comments. How important is this to you? What are you looking for in a Supreme Court nominee? We'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. And Than Bennett, quickly, you think they're going to, whoever the nominee is, you think the president's nominee is being confirmed?
I do. I think they'll be confirmed before the next Supreme Court sits on October 1, Jay. I think it's going to be confirmed by the United States Senate.
All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Don't forget the ACLJ and a matching challenge campaign at aclj.org.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. So Chuck Schumer went on two rants. Yesterday was on Amy Barrett on the Seventh Circuit. He said she passed in his view... just according to Chuck Schumer, that the president's litmus test has been met with Chuck Schumer because it's overturning Roe versus Wade and striking down the ACA. He then says Barrett attacked the Supreme Court's decision upholding the Affordable Care Act, which has helped millions of people secure health insurance coverage. By the way, half the judges in the United States attacked it. Barrett also fought efforts to ensure that all women have access to contraceptive. She disagrees with stare decisis, the idea that cases like Roe are settled law in the courts, and instead has said she wants space for re-argument. She said that generally, by the way, not just on Roe. And could you imagine if stare decisis, that means that the existing, let's define stare decisis, Andy, for our radio audience.
Stare decisis is a principle of law that says cases with similar facts should be similarly decided. In other words, law that is settled and has been decided based upon the existence of certain facts and certain law should be decided in the same way. And the reason is to give some reliability so people know if they act in a certain way, this is the way that courts are going to decide the cases.
Of course, she also said that she just believes that there should be space for re-argument when judges believe that maybe the stare decisis is wrong.
Like Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal? Like, you want me to go through a whole list of
cases?
Go
back on our history. I mean, there was many, Karamazov? Many years of cases where you would disagree strongly on both sides of the aisle, on racial issues, on religious issues, on civil rights issues. I mean, the list goes on and on. If you just went by stare decisis, we would be a country where African Americans would not be counted fully. I mean, that's the truth. So this reliance on stare decisis makes sense in the general sense of what Andy's talking about, criminal law, so people kind of understand the basics. But there are times, and it should be rare, but there are times when judges need to look at things again.
Yeah. So, Cece, that's all she's saying, right? I mean, is that you want to have enough space, like every judge would say, if an issue comes before, guess what? If a petition for writ of certiorari is filed to the Supreme Court of the United States and the Supreme Court's granted review, guess what? Everything's up for grabs. I mean, now that's. I hope that's not, you know, is that going to make news around the country? Jay Sekulow said that. That's fact. If the Supreme Court's granted review in your case, there's a chance that, guess what, an existing president might be overturned or the court's going to go in a different direction on something. That's just the way it is.
They just did it.
They just did it in basically overturning the Abood decision on labor unions. I mean, it happens all the time. So, I mean, we're acting like this is some great shock. Now, Roe versus Wade, I said it yesterday on the broadcast. I'm going to say it again. Does not end abortion in the United States. It just returns it to the states. Do I think that there are five votes for overturning Roe versus Wade? I have no idea. I don't think so. There are not right now. I could tell you that. Would there be with Amy Barrett or Kefledge or Kavanaugh? I don't know, because you don't know how the judge is going to actually come down on that when it's decided. But you want to know what their judicial philosophy is. How do they view the Constitution? That's a large part of that. Cece?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, what Amy Barrett has said is nothing outrageous. She is just following the Constitution. She's strict constructionist, following the law. So, you know, it's amazing to me that we can have pro-abortion women on the court, but Schumer's going after this woman simply because she's pro-life.
Oh, this is a double standard. There's no question.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So last thing that Chuck Schumer says on this one, the bottom line, Judge Barrett has given every indication that she will be an activist judge on the court. If chosen as the nominee, she will be the deciding vote to overturn Roe versus Wade and to strike down pre-existing conditions protections in the ACA, which, by the way, is the only section they talk about because they know the rest of it has been a disaster. Having said that, I'm going to go to Than Bennett, our director of governmental affairs, who thinks this is all very interesting, but at the end of the day, guess what? The president's nominees are being confirmed.
Well, first of all, Jay, it's deeply ironic that the left in Washington, D.C. suddenly care about judicial restraint. Where have I heard that before? Almost never. But look, as it comes to Amy Barrett specifically, she's already gotten the votes of Senate Democrats Joe Donnelly, Tim Kaine, Joe Manchin. Oh, by the way, Brett Kavanaugh, when he was before the United States Senate, he got four Democrats to vote for him as well. So Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin and Dianne Feinstein, Jay, I think they're probably ruining the day that they criticize the faith of Amy Barrett. I think they probably will rue the day they criticize Brett Kavanaugh and all of these others. But Jay, those are not the votes that are going to determine the confirmation. It's the Senate Democrats who have to go to states that Donald Trump won and cast a vote on this nominee before they go to the ballot box. Jay, they're going to have to choose. I will say this. They'll have to choose between the nominee and their Senate seat. I think those that vote against this eventual nominee will lose their Senate seat.
Listen to what Dianne Feinstein said to Amy Barrett during her confirmation hearing.
When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country.
The dogma lives loudly within you.
Yeah, I mean, it is, again, I think one of...
She got a lot of flack for that, Dianne Feinstein, by the way.
Deservedly so. I mean, that is rhetoric that I would not say that would not be in line with most Democrats. I don't think even the listeners on this broadcast that may be left-leaning. I think that's about as far left, anti-religion, anti-Christian, anti-Catholic, anti-religious as you can be. Dick Durbin followed it up with, you know, saying you're an Orthodox Catholic. This is coming from a Catholic, I mean, from Dick Durbin. I mean, so the idea that if you have deeply held religious beliefs, you're now disqualified from government service is, I would not say this lightly, but the Founding Fathers would be rolling over in their graves if you could not be a deeply religious person and hold public office in America.
How did you react to that, Andy?
It appalled me. Every time I hear her say that the dogma runs loudly within you, it makes me sick to think that a United States senator would take to task a person because of their religion and apply a religious test, which the Constitution forbids from happening. But to make that statement and then Durbin to follow up and ask you, are you an Orthodox Catholic? No, I'm a cafeteria Catholic. I pick abortion. I'm for this. I'm for that. I'm for this. I'm for that. I don't buy the whole thing altogether, teachings of the church. I'll pick and choose what I want. What kind of a statement is that to ask one? Either you are a Greek Orthodox Christian or you are not. And if you are and you buy the faith, does that prohibit you from being a judge? Absolutely not.
Well, according to Dick Durbin, it was a problem. Here's what he said.
Do you consider yourself an Orthodox Catholic?
I am a Catholic, Senator Durbin. I don't, Orthodox Catholic, we kind of, as I said in that article, we just kind of use that as a proxy. It is not, to my knowledge, you know, a term currently in use, but if you're asking whether I take my faith seriously and I'm a faithful Catholic, I am, although I would stress that my personal church affiliation or my religious belief would not bear on the discharge of my duties as a judge.
It was the perfect answer, by the way, because it's the correct answer. And also this asking them how they're going to rule on a case, but again, we're going to get to, we're talking about Brett Kavanaugh on the next segment, but I want your comments on all of this. 1-800-684-3110. And an interesting question came in on Facebook. And one is from Chris. Jay, any chance it will be someone that's not on the list? And I think the answer to that is no. It's going to be somebody on the list. They accuse, Marietta on Facebook wrote, they accuse conservatives of imposing their beliefs, but isn't the left doing the exact same thing, Cece?
Absolutely. That's why this whole argument is about abortion. They care about abortion and keeping it legal. And they are very concerned if their choice of protecting abortion is being cut into by pro-life judges.
The issue, too, is the majority opinion amongst the left in law schools, which is the minority opinion in America, but it is the majority opinion among legal scholars and in law schools, this far left ideology. Yep. So they have this big groupthink mentality. Let's go to Patty in New York on line one. Patty, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Patty, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to add a little comment that Chuck Schumer, he doesn't speak for all of us New Yorkers. And it so bothers me that he acts as though he does, and he doesn't.
Well, look.
Where I'm from, there.
Go ahead.
There are Trumps, you know, and that's all. It bothers me. Every time he says something, it's like he doesn't speak for all of us.
Well, here's what you get. You know, elections have consequences. He's your senior senator from New York, but I will say this. Yesterday it was Amy Barrett. Today it is going after Brett Kavanaugh. We'll go to that one next. Yeah. And then tomorrow, or maybe he takes off for July 4th, Jordan said, but then it's going to be somebody after that.
Yeah, there'll be someone after that, and then probably somebody Saturday, then probably somebody Sunday.
And then the full attack on Monday.
And then whoever it is, right. So he's got it out. And then, this, I think, actually helps rally conservatives. I think Chuck Schumer's I want him to keep doing this, but I think he's made a bad decision. Because this just rallies conservatives. I mean, what he's saying here, one, he's making his first two tweets about both of them are wrong because he cannot prove them. Second, the president of the United States has said he does not ask that question. There's these litmus tests on Roe versus Wade. And by the way, we know every single Democrat. I don't have to guess. I mean, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was an ACLU attorney. Kagan, Sotomayor, they were all writing about abortion. I mean, so you didn't have to ask them the question. You knew where they were.
Yeah. All right, we're going to be taking a break. We're coming back. We're going to take your comments at 1-800-684-3110. I have a simple question for you. How important is this issue to you? The president's going to make the decision on Monday. What are you looking for in a Supreme Court justice? What are the issues that matter to you? Religious liberty? Is it the issue of life? Tell us what you think. 1-800-684-3110. And don't forget, the ACLJ, we're in a matching challenge campaign at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Any amount you donate to us, we get a matching gift for, and we encourage you to support our work. But again, if you want to talk to us on air, 1-800-684-3110. Tonight, 8 o'clock, Facebook and Periscope, concert by the Jay Sekulow Band.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at at ACLJ.org.
No matter what, it's a great tune. We should play that during one of the breaks because it kind of, no matter what you do, guess what? I'm going to go to Fan Ben on this because I got cut off while we were on Facebook. You're convinced whoever it is, they're confirmed. To walk everybody through the process of what's going to go forward here.
Sure. Well, you've got to have the hearing process, which if you follow the Gorsuch timeline, which I think this will follow, sets up a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee sometime near the middle or end of August. I'm guessing maybe that last week of August. Then you have to have a vote in the committee and ultimately on the floor. Jay, I think sometime in mid-September is when you're looking at a final confirmation vote. And when you come to that final confirmation vote, it's a numbers game. You have 51 Republicans. If you have John McCain's vote, if his seat, if he cannot make it to Washington, D.C., then you start with 50. But, Jay, you also have a number, and we're talking about 10 Senate Democrats who have to go to the polls this fall in states that Donald Trump won, some of them by overwhelming margins. That is a big reason that you had three Senate Democrats vote for Neil Gorsuch the first time around. It's a big reason that Tim Kaine voted for Amy Barrett for the Seventh Circuit. So I actually think you start on all of these nominees with a universe of something like 56, 57, 58 votes. So you can lose some, frankly, on both sides of the aisle, and they'll still get confirmed. I'll tell you this, Jay. If the name comes off the list that President Trump gives us, I think the Senate's going to confirm that name.
Well, there's no doubt that it's going to be one of the names that are on the list, but I also think there's no doubt that you're starting to hear who the front runners are. Go ahead.
Here's why I think Dan's right, too. When you put out a list like that of 25, you have both Democrats, Republicans, and the White House, and all the outside interest groups doing a deep dive into these people.
Which we've done.
We've seen in the past before, this was before technology, Bill Clinton ran into this with one of his attorney general nominees, that you know you couldn't always find out everything about everybody's personal life, right, and issues like that that may arise that have nothing to do with ideology, that then kind of disrupt a nominee. At this point, because of all the technology that's available and the research that's available, you would think that with all the Democrats looking at it, with all the Republicans looking at it, all this is going to be is ideology. And right now, Republicans are in a slim majority with ideology, plus have a few Democrats who are probably so nervous about their reelection that they are, and they already do kind of lean towards the middle, that if it's, again, I saw Dick Durbin, and he basically is giving up at least a couple of Democrat votes already. Yep. Now, he thinks he can get the other two, Murkowski and Collins, from the Republican side.
I don't think so.
But I don't see that happening either.
Brett Kavanaugh serves on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. I've known Brett also for a long time. I know most of these nominees. We worked with Brett when he was in the Bush White House. Worked with him when he was in private practice. He did a couple of cases. Filed briefs in a couple of our cases on religious freedom. But here's the big challenge. This is the position that's that Chuck Schumer raised on Brett Kavanaugh. And he says, Brett Kavanaugh would have helped the Trump administration keep a young girl in federal custody to prevent her from obtaining constitutionally protected health care. That is not what the case was about. The case was about, could this unaccompanied minor have access to abortion? And that is a very different issue, and Brett Kavanaugh came out with a reasoned position on that. But again, interesting here, constitutionally protected health care. He doesn't say abortion there, but that's what it was about.
It's always a spin, and it is always abortion, and it is always about the right of a woman to kill her child. So that's what's so telling about Chuck Schumer is clearly abortion is his litmus test.
Yes.
Although he blamed, says that it's President Trump's, but clearly it's Schumer's litmus test that you have to be pro-abortion.
Yeah, so here's the thing. So the irony of all this, though. So it's almost as if, I mean, and you look at this, it's like it's disqualification if you take a conservative position on these things. It's like, now you can't serve on the. Where is that in the under the qualifications to serve on the Supreme Court of the United States, Andy? Where is that? if you're conservative or you take a pro-life position, or he likes to say here, denying denying a young girl an abortion. Why didn't he put that in there? Because that doesn't sound so good when you don't know the facts and circumstances. And Brett Kavanaugh gave a reasoned opinion. So they don't like reasoned opinions, Andy.
No, there's apparently Nothing in the Constitution that says conservatives cannot be on the Supreme Court, or people who are pro-life cannot be on the Supreme Court, or the other way around for that matter. There's nothing that says that liberal as we define it today. I mean, liberal used to be a nice word years and years ago. I mean, a liberal education was something that we all sought for and thought that colleges would provide us, and that's what we went for. But we've seen a change and a metamorphosis in the use of all those terms over time. But Schumer is, of course, he's got an agenda. He's got a rant. I looked at all these emails, and he's got one vote, and his vote doesn't count for much other than his own vote.
Yep.
For those of you who are younger, listen to this broadcast, you might have kids or you've been looking at preschools and things like that. You literally have to sign off now if the preschool can apply sunscreen to your child's skin. And yet this was about a minor child.
Right.
As he says, young girl having an abortion.
Right.
So, I mean, just think about the again, abortion distortion. Invasive procedure, young girl can have. A preschooler must have a sign-off to get sunscreen put on before they go outside to the playground.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 1-800-684-3110.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Sandy in California on line three.
Hey, Sandy.
Hi. I was wondering, what in the world does she mean by dogma when she asked that question? I don't understand.
Well, let's play the question. I don't want to play the answer, but I want to play the question again. This is the dogma question. Go ahead.
When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's
right
a concern.
There. You know, the dogma lives loudly within you. First of all, she was a law professor writing law review articles. Guess what? They express their academic persuasions. What do you think she means, Andy, by the dogma lives loudly within you?
That means that if you believe, and you're a Catholic, and you believe in the doctrine of transubstantiation, that is to say that the bread and the wine become the blood and body of Christ, then that dogma runs loudly within you, and that somehow is a dangerous thing to have, to believe on in a principle, because if you believe in that principle, you may be doing something that's horrible and unconstitutional.
All right, I'm going to go around the horn here. Start with Than. Than, we've talked about Amy Barrett and a little bit on Brett Kavanaugh. We'll talk more about both of these two nominees. Your sense is they get confirmed. Somebody on that list. It may not be those two, but you're from a an election standpoint or a vote standpoint, procedurally, you feel like they get confirmed?
From a numbers and politics perspective, Jay, I mean, if you looked at the exit polling, people chose Donald Trump because they wanted him to pick the next nominees for the Supreme Court, and they picked a Senate that was hoping to confirm that nominee. Jay, 10 Senate Democrats are going to have to go back to states that Donald Trump won and ask those voters to reelect them. I think that because of that, this is not even going to be that close. People are looking at a 50-49 margin. I predict this will be something more like 53, 54, 55 votes in favor of anyone off this list, Jay.
All right, Andy?
I agree with what Than said. These Democrats, the first rule is when you get in power, stay in power. Right. In order to do that, you got to vote for the Trump nominee.
Quickly, Cece.
I think they get confirmed, too. I look at Amy's confirmation and Kavanaugh's confirmation. They won.
Yeah, I think, again, Republicans stay strong. There's going to be a lot of rhetoric, but you can get these nominees confirmed. I think on the list of 25, everybody's been able to do their research. There's no surprises here on anybody. The only surprise will be who President Trump picks on Monday.
Yep. All right, we're taking your calls coming back from the break at 1-800-684-3110. We're here for 30 more minutes. Go over to Facebook or ACLJ.org. We're broadcasting there if you don't get the full hour. And don't forget the matching challenge campaign at ACLJ.org.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.
welcome back to the broadcast. So Chuck Schumer has gone on two Twitter rants. The first one against Amy Barrett says that she's on the list because she's met the president's litmus test of overturning Roe versus Wade and striking down the Affordable Care Act. And then he goes through that list. Then it's Brett Kavanaugh. He's on the list also because he's pre-approved on the litmus test of striking down Roe versus Wade and striking down protections for people with pre-existing conditions in the ACA. That's what the attack there. And he doesn't like the fact that Brett Kavanaugh would have helped the Trump administration keep a young girl in federal custody to prevent her from obtaining constitutionally protected health care. Young girl, in other words, getting an abortion. My understanding of the facts is unaccompanied minor in the immigration debate that's been going on the southern border. So there you have it. That seems to be the focus of what's happening. So let's be very clear on that. That's number one. Number two, we got an interesting comment from Vicky on Periscope, and I think this is a good way to start this segment out. And she asked this question: I want a judge that makes rulings according to the Constitution and the laws, not their personal beliefs, now how they like the case to come out. I think it was Justice Scalia famously said, if you're applying the law correctly, sometimes you're going to come to a decision that you personally disagree with, but you're applying the law the way the law was meant to be applied, Andy. I mean, that was I think it was Justice Scalia said that.
You apply the law as it is written. You don't text it. You don't gloss it. You don't interpret it. You start with the Constitution. As Justice Scalia said, we begin with the Constitution, someone said in an opinion. And Justice Scalia added, and we end there.
Right. Well, it's a textualist, and I think all these nominees are textualists. That's clear. They're also putting a lot of focus on the fact that the Federalist Society has been big involved in the vetting of this, as if that's some kind of a bad thing. The Federalist Society does great work. There's groups on the left that are like the Federalist Society left-to-center group.
Yeah, the American Bar Association.
Yeah, the ABA. Yeah. I think there's another one of the constitutional societies they're called. I've spoken at a couple of those. But the fact is, these nominees, the president was forthright and put out the 25 potential nominees, updated the list during his presidency so far as new names were added. It couldn't have been any clearer.
No, and couldn't have made it any easier for the left to come up with their opposition research.
Fine.
And by the way, pretty weak. I must say, their opposition research, unless they're holding something back on one of these 25, when they know they've got a minority, I don't think they would be holding back. So if they really had stuff on these folks that would disqualify them, you would think.
By now they'd be doing it.
I mean, we're talking about days away from the announcement. This is when you'd start putting the real dirt out, unless they just are holding it on these five. Because he has done something unprecedented by telling people months in advance who he will pick from.
Yeah, I mean, months in advance. I mean, a year and a half in advance in some case. Patrick on Periscope writes, very simple, Patrick says, I want a constitutionalist on the court. So do I. Here's what Chuck Grassley, when Amy Barrett was getting attacked, this is what he had to say.
You've been outspoken about your role and your Catholic faith and what that plays in your life. And you've thought and written about the role your faith should play in your profession. When is it proper for a judge to put their religious views above applying the law?
Thank you, Chairman Grassley. Let me start with your very last question and say never. It's never appropriate for a judge to impose that judge's personal convictions, whether they derive from faith or anywhere else, on the law.
Because judges are to rule on the law, and that's the rule of a judge. So one of the questions that every president would ask a nominee, CeCe, is, how do you view your role as judge? How do you view your role under the Constitution?
Right, absolutely. And that's where we're looking for someone who says, I would view it as applying the law, the Constitution, and that's it. Not my personal opinion, not an interpretation, but I will be bound by the Constitution.
All right, we're going to take your calls when we come back from the break. Our phone number is 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. But I do want Sam Bennett to say one more time, his view is the nominee will be confirmed.
And I think the answer you just played is one of the reasons why, Jay. Brilliant answer. Anybody off this list will be confirmed by the United States Senate and confirmed before the Supreme Court sits for its next term.
Which is good, because we just filed a case at the Supreme Court yesterday on a free speech case. But I think if we get Grant on that one, I think we win 9-0. Just a little prediction. All right, we'll take your calls. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. Back with more in just a moment.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
It's a great tune, no matter what. And I think no matter what the left throws here, there's going to be a new Supreme Court justice comes the first Monday in October, which is October 1st. We have a case that we have now filed before the Supreme Court of the United States, a free speech case out of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. Involving areas near the University of Alabama. No free speech inside college campuses. Now they want to restrict free speech outside of college campuses. That's a general statement. I'm not going to get into particulars because now all of our Roll Tide are going to be not so happy about that. Although Will is an Auburn University graduate, so he's quite fine with that. Anyways, we'll get more into that in the days ahead. But again, it tells you that what happens at the Supreme Court, their freedom of speech case, is very important. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Let me also say this. Tonight at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern, we're going to be doing a freedom concert in celebration of July 4th on our Facebook pages for our band, the Jay Sekulow Band. And tomorrow on the broadcast, we've got a special broadcast, which is going to include commentary and music. So it would be kind of a nice thing, and that'll run during the radio broadcast. So if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, you can not only hear it, but you could actually see it, and we'll be replaying that again. All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Interesting question, though, coming from Linda on Periscope. Are there enough votes for confirmation without a Democrat crossing over?
Yes, there are. I mean, it would be a slim margin. Right now, depending on whether Senator McCain was able to return to Washington. If not, it would be 50 to 49. And so you'd have to have all 50 Republicans obviously vote for that nominee. So, yes, you could do it. But I don't think you're going to be at that point. I think there's at least two, possibly three, maybe more Democrats who are up for re-election. There are 10 Democrats up for re-election this midterm election in November in states that Donald Trump won handedly. A few of those he won by 20 and 30 points. So those Democrats are going to have to be taking a really strong look at how much they like their Senate seat, because you bet your socks off that this will be a campaign ad if they vote no on one of these nominees.
So, Stan, I want to go to you on that same question. It's a really good question. That is, are there enough votes for confirmation without a Democrat crossing over?
Yeah, and the answer is just yes. And look, John McCain might be able to come back to D.C. Also, there's speculation that if the defense authorization bill finishes up, he might possibly retire. So that could mean the Republican seat filled that way.
Yeah, but the governor of Arizona would then appoint the rest of the term.
That's correct. But I really just don't think this is going to be a slim margin. It's going to be a fight. There's going to be a lot of rhetoric. But look, Joe Donnelly, Joe Manchin, Heidi Heitkamp all voted for Neil Gorsuch. Tim Kaine, add to that list, voted for Amy Barrett. And then if you look at people like Bill Nelson, Claire McCaskill, John Tester, Bob Casey, Jay, those are all moderate Democrats in states that Donald Trump won. I think they like their Senate seats. And so I suspect that a lot of them will be on the table as well. I don't think this is going to be that close of a margin in the end.
I agree. All right, let's go ahead and take a phone call.
Yep, Sonia calling in from New York, online to Sonia. Welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hi, Sonia.
Hi, Sonia.
Okay, you got to turn down your, let me give you a hint. Turn down your radio before you talk to us. So, Sonia, is she ready to go? Are we ready to go? Sonia, go ahead.
Are we ready to go?
Nope. Okay, we'll come back to Sonia and talk to her. I have a question I want to put out there, and that is this. You see the two primary attack points right now from Chuck Schumer. He's only focusing on Amy Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh. He brings up abortion in different ways, both saying they both would pass the Roe versus Wade litmus test that the president has to overturn it, which the president said he's not even asking that question. That's number one. Number two, on Brett Kavanaugh, he talks about the young girl in federal custody, preventing her from obtaining constitutionally protected health care. Noticeably, does not say what it was about an abortion. Noticeably changes where it omits what it was actually about, CeCe.
Yeah, and that's what the pro-abortionists always do. They change the terminology to make it more appealable, more palatable. And they don't want to talk about killing a baby, which is what abortion is. They want to switch the words around and say, you know, access to women's health care and things that make it so ridiculous. Instead of saying, you're killing a baby.
Well, he does say, it's interesting, he uses abortion when he attacks Amy Barrett, and he does say Roe versus Wade in the Brett Kavanaugh attack, but on the Brett Kavanaugh attack, he doesn't say the word abortion, he says constitutionally protected health care. So there you have it. But Andy, if you were looking at from a perspective of what you look for in a Supreme Court nominee, you looked at because it's not getting the attention it should. How do they view criminal law? How do they view separation of powers? How do they view executive power? What about Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, the roles of the courts? That's separation of powers. You've taken a look at Brett Kavanaugh's and have been very impressed.
I looked at Judge Kavanaugh's dissent in a case called United States versus Askew, and this was a situation, to put it very quickly, in which a person was stopped and frisked under the decision of the United States Supreme Court in Terry versus Ohio. He was stopped and frisked because of suspicious activity. This court permitted that. It permits it today. It's called a Terry stop. He resisted the frisk. He was turning and shifting and was resisting the frisk that the officers were trying to do to determine if he had any weapons for their own personal protection. And they unzipped his coat and found a revolver stuck down in his coat pocket. The majority of the D.C. Circuit suppressed the gun and said, we throw the gun out, you can't use it as evidence. Judge Kavanaugh, in a lengthy dissent, said, of course you can use the gun. He resisted the frisk. The officers have a right to protect themselves. Unzipping a coat pocket is not an unreasonable intrusion and a search of a person. I was impressed with what he wrote. And I mean, I read it and I read it again, and I thought this judge knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I think he'd be great. I like the entire list. Interesting question coming in. Rory on Facebook says, since Judge Barrett has only been on the circuit court for less than a year, is that going to be an issue, Jordan?
It's longer than Elena Kagan ever served on a court.
She was never on a court.
Never on a court.
Not a prerequisite.
Not a prerequisite. Don't even have to be a lawyer to be a Supreme Court justice.
Yes. Well, people don't know that, but you do not have to be a lawyer.
You never have to even argue a case to be a Supreme Court justice.
So let's take a look at, I think we look at this, you know, from a little bit of a different perspective here, and look at it from what's going to take place. So let's kind of see what's going to happen. There's going to be a tremendous amount of speculation the rest of this week. The president's going to meet with the various nominees, potential nominees. He's going to come to, well, the way it works in process is the White House counsel, Don McGahn, his office is very involved in this. They do consult with groups like the Federalist Society and others just to get information about various judges. But the decision rests in the White House counsel's office representing the president because the president's the one that makes the final decision. So that process is ongoing. Now, the good thing about having a list of 25 is that these names have been out there for a while, so they've been fully vetted. And that's why I think you're seeing a pretty weak response coming from the opposition here, because there's not much you can go after these judges because they've been so well vetted. So you've got that situation. So that, I will tell you, that they'll say this one's leading, and then it's going to be that one's leading, or we're hearing such and such. I think the way that you, let me tell you when you're going to know, Monday when the president makes the announcement, because notoriously what happens on these, just kind of the facts, is as it gets near the end, things sometimes move. The president may come to a decision and come to a decision on Thursday or Friday and say, you know what, this is where I'm leaning or this is the one I want, but continue the discussions. That's part of the process here. So you don't know until the nomination's made. Now, having said that, once it is made, then another process goes into place, and let's, Fan, put a time frame on what will happen after Monday afternoon.
Yeah, sure. After the nomination is made, Jay, that nomination gets sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and they begin a process of examining that nominee's background, gathering their writings, gathering their rulings, questioning the nominee in a written fashion. That process, Jay, for Neil Gorsuch took 48 days. So let's just assume it follows the same track. The nomination comes down on Monday. That puts you into late August. Now, remember, the United States Senate is here in Washington, D.C. this year in August. They're not on recess as they typically are. That ruling, that decision has already been made by Leader McConnell. So then you would have probably 4 days' worth of hearings. Not all of them the nominee would be there for, but 4 days' worth of hearing inside the committee. Probably that last week of August is where I think it would be. Shortly thereafter, you'd have a vote in committee, and then it would move to the floor. So, Jay, I guess the point I'm making process-wise is you don't have to rush this through to get a nominee seated before the Supreme Court sits. If you follow sort of the regular timeline, the timeline that was followed for Neil Gorsuch, this nominee will have a vote on the floor of the full Senate well before the Supreme Court sits, and I suspect that's the timeline that we will roughly follow.
Lisa on Facebook says, will the new justice be sworn in before the midterm election? I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's the plan right now. That would be, I mean, barring some unforeseen circumstances where you'd have one of those situations where a nominee had to withdraw for some reason, personal reason, health reason, something like that. Barring anything like that, there will be a ninth Supreme Court justice sitting when the Supreme Court term begins in October.
Yeah, I think that's... That's correct. CeCe, this is an interesting question that came in. We're taking your calls, by the way, at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to play some music during the break here coming up. But what are your thoughts on the talk of settled law? Because that's what they keep referring to when they talk about Roe versus Wade, settled law.
Yeah, I think Roe versus Wade is actually a good example of law that's not settled because it's been attacked so regularly. So clearly, they don't think it's settled. So, you know, that again goes back to stare decisis and a law can be judged and on the books and still be wrong.
Yeah.
And we see those overturned.
Yeah.
So, I don't think Roe v. Wade is settled. And I think that's what they're concerned about.
Yeah. So 1-800-684-3110 is the number. That's 800-684-3110. As if the Supreme Court doesn't have the authority, if they think a case is wrongly decided, to overturn it. They do it all the time. But again, don't ask the judge, the nominee to prejudge how they're going to decide a particular case, because it depends on facts, circumstances, and arguments. All right, we'll take your calls at 800-684-3110. Don't forget our matching challenge campaign at aclj.org. Back with more in just a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. As you know, Pastor Andrew is facing charges of, quote, Christianization, on trial for simply living out his Christian faith. He could spend the rest of his life in a Turkish prison. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're aggressively advocating for Pastor Andrew's freedom. We've mobilized our international offices. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved, and we've submitted a critical legal document to the United Nations. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.
By the way, tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern time, you could figure out your time zone from there, a special Freedom Concert from our band, J Secular Band. We're going to be doing that this evening, about an hour-long performance or so of kind of freedom-tuned or themed songs. And so you can watch that on Facebook, and that'll be, like I said, at 9 o'clock Eastern time. We encourage you to let your friends know that. Tomorrow on the broadcast, we have a special broadcast, which will include some of the music and some of the concert and some commentary as we celebrate July 4th. And as part of that, you'll also see tomorrow on Facebook and Periscope, Will, correct? The concert will run at noon with the commentary. So it'll be, we're going to post that. So you may not get a live notification, correct? Yeah, we may not get a live notification, but you go there at 12 o'clock tomorrow, there will be. All right, we're taking your calls. Last segment of the broadcast, 800-684-3110. Val did say the J Secular Band has the best musicians and vocalists. I would agree that it very, I mean, you know, I would agree. All right, we're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. Let's go to the phones.
Yeah, I mean, this is one a lot of people have, I think, because it's such a closely divided Senate. Charlene in Nevada on line one. Charlene, welcome to J Secular Live.
Hi, Charlene.
Hi, Jay.
Hey.
I was just wondering, is there any way for the Democratic Party to block the vote for the Republican or for the Supreme Court justice? Can the Republicans do it on their own?
So in the old days, there was a 60-vote requirement they had in the Senate rules for filibuster. That's no longer the case.
Yeah, there's no more filibuster. That happened since the Gorsuch nomination. Now, it was really started by Harry Reid. He opened the door to getting rid of the filibuster for all nominees but Supreme Court nominees. Ultimately, Mitch McConnell, under a lot of pressure from conservatives, changed that rule because, honestly, Justice Gorsuch would have been filibustered. They could not. He was being filibustered,
yes.
And so they had to change the rules. So what does that mean now? Democrats can't stop a vote from occurring. All they can do is try to rally votes around it to defeat a nominee. So obviously you could still defeat a nominee once a vote occurs. Usually, though, before that would happen, that nominee would withdraw and you'd start with someone else. So, again, it makes it much more difficult for Democrats as we speak right now when they're in the minority.
So, and Andy, from your perspective, I mean, there was no constitutional requirement for a 60-vote threshold.
No, of course
it's not in the Constitution. So when they call it the nuclear option going to the 50 plus one, the majority vote, the truth of the matter is that's actually the constitutional option because that's what the
right.
Constitution requires.
The Constitution does not provide for this filibuster idea. This was something that was developed through the traditions in the Senate. Filibuster literally meaning to steal. And what they were doing was they were stealing time. I learned that from Senator Hatch, by the way.
There you go.
They were stealing time.
You know, it's not a Greek word?
No, it's not. Filibustare. Actually, I think it's a Portuguese word or a Spanish word, but it
for
certainly
pirate,
is
right?
Not a Greek word. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right, filibuster.
How about
and,
that?
And what it means is to steal. And you're stealing away the time of the people in the Senate, the senators, to have the right to vote. And that was done away with by Harry Reid.
You didn't know
Reid,
my Portuguese was that good, did you?
Yeah, no, I knew. I can tell you that Chris Matthews' Spanish is awful and he shouldn't use
going
it.
Going back to that.
You know, when he says that, and he's another one who's like Schumer. He says, you know, there's not going to pass. Non pasario, which is ridiculous. There is no such thing in Spanish. It's non pasaran. And if he knew that, he would have read something about the Spanish Civil War, which he says what we're engaged in right now. But he, of course, we know is a moron and doesn't even
there
know
goes
either.
Andy. Okay.
So, I mean, what
and
can
Andy,
I say?
Andy, that is attributed to Andy Economist's individual capacity. You're going to hear from Pam on that tonight.
Good.
You will. All right. Let's talk about where we go, because I think it's important.
Well,
go ahead.
You were out of town. We said worse things about Chris Matthews than that word.
Well, okay, so we're going to play it for everybody.
It's a Greek word that means child, moro. All right,
here we go. Here is Chris Matthews. Andy, good save. All right, here's Chris Matthews.
I think this is going to be the fight of the century. I think the Democrats have to say, no way, non passario, no one passes this line. I think it's going to be almost like Spanish Civil War stuff. You watch the next few months.
And I think it's exactly incorrect. I think these nominees, CC, are getting through. They're trying to make it an abortion litmus test. If they do, so be it. But you know what? the way the Senate's structured right now, there is an abortion litmus test. If you're a left of center and if you were pro-life, guess what? You wouldn't be nominated to the Supreme Court of the United States. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, my mom used to say, who practiced law for a long, long time, 60 years, you know, if you don't have facts, you pound on the table. If you don't have law, you scream. And if you don't have both, you know, either facts or law, you just throw a fit. And that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah.
Is they're throwing a fit because they know that these, you know, they're going to get confirmed.
Also, Democrats have historically, and I think this is their own fault, have been horrendous at educating their own supporters about the importance of judicial nominees. Republicans have spent decades educating their supporters and Republicans about the importance of judicial nominees. So Republican voters care about it. Democrat voters kind of ignore it until it happens. And by the time it happens, it's not long enough for them to organize. So the only groups you really will see organizing, guess who? Pro-abortion groups. That's it.
Yeah.
You might see some of the LGBT groups organize as
well.
That
has not even been an issue with these nominees.
It's not much of an issue for these nominees.
Yeah, because I think you're right. I think at the end of the day, it's abortion. Now, having said that, Ben, I think we do. Yeah, and what Jordan was just about to say, you're going to be on the Hill, and you're going to be running into your contemporaries from the other side, and it's going to be Planned Parenthood in big numbers.
Yeah, it's going to be a fight, Jay. It will be a well-funded fight, and they will be out in full capacity. I mean, I think Chuck Schumer has already given that signal. But look, the Democrats can say no way all they want, and it really does not matter, Jay. They do not have the votes to impact this process as long as Republicans stay together on it. And look, I think it speaks to the strength of President Trump's list that the Democrats are now moving to arguments of, you know, someone's faith living loudly in them. I think they have not found anything on this list, the nominees that are on the list. And Jay, I would just say this. If they do say no way, if they try to block this nominee, the nominee is still going to get confirmed. And you know what's going to happen? The Senate Democrats are going to lose those Senate seats come the midterm. That's the choice they're going to have to make. Oppose this nominee or lose their Senate seat.
I think that's my sense is that's correct. I think that the nominee will be confirmed. I think you're going to see a lot of speculation in the media in the next 72 hours to who the nominee is. There's a group of finalists. That's always the case. Ultimately, the decision is made by the President of the United States. The lasting legacy of any president is the Supreme Court of the United States. This president will have had two Supreme Court vacancies in 2 years, less than 2 years, actually. So that's going to impact the Supreme Court for a long time, and there's no question that there'll be groups that are opposed. But at the end of the day, I agree with Than. The nominee is going to be confirmed, and I don't think it'll be 51-49. I think it'll be more than that. I don't think it'll be widely bipartisan, but I think there'll be Democratic crossover.
Yeah, I think
because of the way the elections are set up.
At least a handful, and maybe more so than we've seen in the past, because as Than's pointed out throughout these last 2 weeks, 10 of the Democrats that are up for re-election, 10 are in states that President Trump won, and a handful of those are in states that he won by 20-plus points.
Yep. All right, that does it for the broadcast today. Let me tell you what's coming on tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, a special Freedom Concert by the Jay Sekulow Band on Facebook and Periscope. So it'll be on our Jay Sekulow Facebook page, ACLJ's, Jay Sekulow Band, all those simultaneously. You want to tune in for that. Tomorrow's broadcast, we've got a special broadcast. Even on July 4th, we celebrate freedom. We have some music, be some commentary, and you'll actually see the video for some of the concert footage that runs the night before during the broadcast. You may not get an alert because obviously it's July 4th, so no one's going to be doing it live, but it'll be recorded so you can see it on Facebook and Periscope. That's going to do it for the broadcast today. Have a great July 4th as we celebrate our independence and our freedoms and our liberty. And we've got a lot to celebrate there. Let me also say this. Don't forget your support of the ACLJ is critical. We're starting our July Matching Challenge campaign. You do that at ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ, we get a matching gift for. We'll talk to you tomorrow. God bless
you, we'll see. The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at ACLJ.org.